From KPFK, Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. A week after Vermont Senator and presidential candidate Bernie Sanders unveiled his ambitious plan to tax billionaires, he's now proposed a new plan to tackle the growing wage gap between corporate CEOs and their workers. Explaining on his website that, quote, in the 1950s, CEOs made 20 times more than their median employees, and that, quote, last year, the average S&P 500 CEO made 287 times their median worker pay, Sanders wants to tax those corporations for widening their CEO worker pay gap. The proposal comes on the same day that the Institute for Policy Studies released its 26th Executive Excess Report, a yearly report on the CEO worker pay gap. Joining me is the lead author of that report, Sarah Anderson, director of the Global Economy Project and co-editor of inequality.org at the Institute for Policy Studies. Welcome to the program, Sarah.
Great to be here. Thank you.
So you and I have talked about this report in the past. It's an annual report. What's the status today? It seems as though every year we talk, that gap just gets wider and wider and wider. Did the same hold true this year?
The figures in the report are staggering. The top line finding is that 50 U.S. corporations last year paid their CEO more than 1,000 times as much as they paid their typical worker. So in other words, ordinary workers at these companies would have to work a full millennium before they made as much as their CEO made in 1 year. But I will say that I'm feeling more upbeat this year because I do feel that while people have been outraged about CEO pay for so long, they've also felt like they're wasn't much that we could be doing about it. And I think there is more momentum right now around proposals that could help rein in these outrageous CEO to worker pay gaps.
So let's talk about the study first and then what Sanders has proposed and see if his proposal comes close to addressing the problems that you lay out in your report. And your report also, of course, suggests some very key reforms. So the numbers are pretty astounding here. You said 1,000 to 1 is the sort of average ratio of CEO to worker pay. Which are the corporations and what are some of the numbers we're talking about in terms of what a worker gets paid and what their corporation CEO is making?
Yeah, so it was just at 50 companies, but that's still a large number.
An average of over 50
CEOs more than 1,000 times. I mean, that's still just astounding. And the average pay among those just off the charts companies for the CEO end was about $16 million. And on the worker end, it was more like $10,000. Now, if you look at a broader set of companies, for example, the 500 largest companies, the S&P 500, these are supposed to be the big blue chip leading companies of America, and about 80% of those Fortune 500 companies pay their CEOs more than 100 times, and that itself is just outrageous. If you look at even leading business experts like Peter Drucker, who is considered the founder of modern management science, he argued that any pay gaps beyond 25 to 1 are just bad for business because they're so obscene that they harm worker morale, they boost turnover rates. And so there are a lot of reasons to be outraged by the extreme levels of pay gaps in this country.
So 25 to 1. So say somebody was making a generous $50,000 working for a company. Multiply that by 25. We're still talking about $1,250,000 a year in salary if you go by that, you know, recommended maximum ratio. That's more than enough for anybody to live on.
Absolutely. And I've seen so many people commenting on social media saying, you know, these proposals are just outrageous. No one should be able to tell how much a CEO can make in this country. And that's not really on the table, at least not yet. What we're talking about is putting tax penalties on companies that have these really outrageous gaps. Companies could still pay their CEOs whatever they'd like. They would just have to pay more in taxes. And hopefully that money could go into things that are reducing inequality. So we're not even talking about tomorrow getting down to the kind of level that business leader Peter Drucker and others in the business community think would be a much more rational level of inequality within these companies. It's going to take a while to get there.
And this is publicly known information, right? Corporations do have to reveal what they pay their CEOs.
Yeah, and that's a progressive victory that people often aren't aware of, is that in the Dodd-Frank financial reform, in the wake of the financial crisis, there are a number of executive pay provisions. And one of them is requiring publicly held companies to report every year on the gap between their CEO and their median worker pay. And it took us a long time to get that into force because the corporate lobby groups fought it tooth and nail. They tried to repeal it. They tried to water it down. But we won on that. And so for 2 years now, we've had this data that companies have to report to the SEC.
Now, the UAW strike, United Auto Workers strike, is calling attention to, you know, this incredible gap between worker and CEO pay at the same time that their CEO, General Motors CEO, has made millions of dollars in salary. GM cut the health insurance of striking workers, which is just really just kind of shocking and shockingly punitive. So is there a correlation between a ballooning CEO worker pay gap and the health of that corporation, or even broadly speaking, the health of our democracy?
Absolutely. The more that we shovel into the pockets of these top CEOs, the less money there is available for worker wages or investments in long-term research and development, other things that would be good for our economy and the long-term health of these companies. And then even beyond that, the extreme levels of CEO pay encourage reckless, high-risk behavior. The most obvious example of that is the financial crisis, where executives chasing these bonuses drove our economy off a cliff. But there are many other examples, the opioid crisis, where we've seen executives also cash in on the suffering of so many people. The climate crisis, where the pay structures in the fossil fuel industry reward top executives for drilling more, digging more, contributing more to greenhouse gas emissions. So this is a big problem that goes far beyond the shareholder concerns. You know, that's been the argument in the past, like government shouldn't meddle in executive pay, that shareholders can take care of that. No, we have learned now that these perverse incentives for company leaders affect all of us, and we all have a stake in fixing this problem.
Right. I mean, the sort of free market fundamentalist approach is that the market will take care of it, that the CEOs will naturally, or corporations will naturally, end up distributing income more fairly because they rely on consumer spending, et cetera. That just basically doesn't play out. They just rely on those workers to use government welfare programs to stay afloat instead. So let's talk about the reforms that you suggest. If we know publicly what the CEO salaries are and can, you know, see reports like yours, how can we best use that information to hold corporations accountable?
Yeah. Well, the strategy that I think has the most momentum right now is to tie the pay gap to tax policy, so that the wider a company's gap between their CEO and their worker pay, the higher their tax rate. And the beautiful thing about this is that it's something that can be pursued at the local, state, and federal level. So there is one place in the world that is already imposing a tax like this. It's Portland, Oregon. They started collecting revenue on it last year. It's working very well. It's tackling companies that do business in the city, like Wells Fargo, because they have a branch there, and Walmart, because they have a store there. And in San Francisco, a Portland-style tax should be on the ballot in March 2020. So I think that will draw a lot of attention to the fact that there are things that even city governments can do on this. But ideally, of course, we would have something that covers the whole country. And that's why it was exciting to see that Senator Sanders has come out with a plan. It's not the first one at the federal level, but I think it will draw a lot of attention to the very responsible action that I think policymakers can take, where they use the tax code as an incentive to encourage companies to narrow these gaps.
So specifically, what are you proposing in your report, and how does it compare to Sanders? Is the size of the tax proportional to the pay gap between CEO and worker?
Well, our proposal in the report differs a little bit, but I think they are very consistent. They are graduated rates. We started ours at pay gaps of 100 to 1 and then going up to 500 to 1. And at each tier, companies would have to pay a gradually higher tax rate. So
wait, 100 to 1, that means that you're letting off the hook all those who make 20 between, you know, 25 to 100 times their worker pay?
Well, maybe eventually we'll get to those. I think we're
you start off
a
little
a
more conservatively.
I guess I would say so that if you pay your CEO 100 more than 100 times your typical worker, your a federal corporate tax rate would go from 21 to 22. If it's above 500 to 1, that would be the highest rate. It would go from 21 to 26%. That's still, I don't think, the level of corporate tax rate that we want in this country, but it would be an incentive for companies to narrow these gaps, either by lifting up the bottom, it could kind of build on the living wage movement that way, or bringing down the top. We think that both of those have to happen, bringing down the top and lifting up the bottom.
Right, because that's you can reduce that gap in two directions, both of them in the right direction. Now, the Republican tax reform plan, the law that had passed, now would it be 2 years this December, reduced corporate tax rates so dramatically that essentially the federal our revenues are down dramatically, right? I mean, so we are at a point where the government is going deeply into deficit, something that doesn't seem to concern the Republicans, strangely. And this sort of a tax could help lift that up again and incentivize corporations to keep their taxes low by simply paying their workers more.
Well, I would be in favor of reverting back to the 35% tax rate that we had before the Republican plan, and then adding these increased taxes on top of that based on the pay rate. I think that is should be the standard thing that people are calling for, and because it's so clear now, they claimed that these tax cuts for corporations would pay for themselves. The evidence is in; they absolutely have not. They claimed that they would use the tax windfalls to lift up workers at these companies, and said they've blown trillions of dollars on stock buybacks just to artificially inflate the value of their stock to enrich their shareholders and their CEOs. So we need to go back to the much higher corporate tax rate for all companies. And then on top of that, we should have these tax penalties for really extreme gaps, for the companies that are doing the most to contribute to our country's extreme inequality.
How much revenue do you estimate, or I don't know if your report actually does estimate the revenue that could be raised from taxing corporations? I know that the Sanders plan does estimate $150 billion in revenue over 10 years.
Right. And we came in a little bit similar to that. We looked at the S&P 500 companies and calculated that if this kind of plan had been in effect last year and they didn't change their pay ratios, they would have owed about $17.2 billion in extra federal tax revenue. Now, it's a significant amount of money, and we do convert that into things in the report, like how many food stamp allowances could that cover, how many teacher salaries could it pay for and that kind of thing. And it's not insignificant. It's not as big as the kind of revenue that you'd get from the kind of really bold wealth tax proposals that we're seeing out of, not just Sanders, but other candidates running. And so I don't want to give the impression that this is the one and only tax that we need to reduce inequality in this country. I think it should be part of a package. And it does bring some things, some benefits that the other tax models don't. I think that this tax has a lot to do with narrowing the gaps so that when people go to work every day, they don't feel like they might now that their work is not being fairly valued, that what they're contributing on the job is just an infinitesimal amount of the value of a company compared to what people in the corner offices, the CEOs, are getting. It's also about encouraging companies to have more of a long-term sustainable view, for a vision for their companies instead of just pillaging to enrich the CEO in the short term, because that kind of behavior harms us all. So this isn't a tax that will solve everything. It needs to be part of a broader agenda that includes a wealth tax. I'm really excited to see so many of the presidential candidates are coming out for a financial transaction tax that also has benefits in terms of reining in the whole Wall Street casino, the raising of the individual top marginal tax rates. All of these are really important, and they're part of the toolbox that we need to reverse the levels of extreme inequality.
And I want to get to Sanders's wealth tax plan in just a moment, but what about lifting wages just directly through legislation intended to increase the federal minimum wage? There is a bill in Congress right now, the Raise the Wage Act. Is that also part of the toolbox that you support?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you can't get around the fact that it's just an outrage that our federal minimum wage hasn't been raised for a decade and that it is a poverty wage. Another benefit of the Raise the Wage Act, it would get rid of this horrible sub-minimum wage for restaurant workers and other tipped workers. So that is all really important. And other ideas out there about how to increase worker power, the kinds of labor law reforms and putting workers on boards. I think all of these are important ideas for narrowing the gap. And it's been really fun to see the flourishing of ideas and the robust debate that we're having right now around this.
And the standard corporate comeback to raising the minimum wage is that if they were forced to pay their workers more, they would have to cut jobs. However, it seems that if you also then suggest taxing corporations based on their CEO worker gap, they could simply pay their CEOs a little bit less, right?
Yeah, it's not that hard to figure out. This knee-jerk reaction that any kind of government meddling in corporate practices will be bad for business, bad for the economy, it's not American in all this. Look, we limit corporate behaviors of all kinds. We say how much pollution they can spew out. We have rules about about government contractors not engaging in race and gender discrimination. We have all kinds of rules that society accepts are critical if we're going to have a healthy and equitable democracy. And I really think maybe 10 years from now, people will look back at this debate around the gap between CEO and worker pay and just be appalled that we put up with it for as long as we did, and just take it for granted that we have some public policies that have real teeth and that are addressing this problem.
Let's talk about the wealth tax that Sanders proposed last week. Some have compared it to the centerpiece of Elizabeth Warren's domestic policy around a wealth tax, but Sanders seem to have gone even further. In fact, in an interview with the New York Times, he said he didn't think billionaires should exist. And his plan, according to at least his website, said that it would apply only to net worth over $32 million and would raise an estimated $4.35 trillion over the next decade. I mean, that's half of the cost of a Medicare for All plan right there. So what is a wealth tax? It's not an income tax on wealthy people. It's a tax on the wealth they've accumulated.
Exactly. And thanks for asking that, because I find there is a lot of confusion about what's the difference between income inequality and wealth inequality. With income, it is what you're making in the course of that 1 year. For most of us, it's our salary, because we don't have the extensive investments that are most of the annual income for a lot of the ultra wealthy people. When you're talking about wealth, it is how much you've accumulated over time. How much is the value of your home, your investments in the stock market, your pension funds, and so forth. And that's where the gaps in this country are much more severe, actually, than the income gaps. The wealth gaps are much better, bigger, especially if you break it down by race. And that's because of just generation upon generation of certain people facing discrimination and other disadvantages, while others have inherited wealth, and it just continues to build and build and build. And so, you know, I think that's a bold statement from Bernie Sanders, but who needs $1 billion, you know?
Right. What do you do after the first few million? I mean, say you buy, you know, buy yourself several yachts, and maybe you buy yourself a building or two, and then what? I mean, it just sits there.
I read an interview with a corporate CEO once where the man was asked, you know, how can you possibly spend all this money, or why do you even want this much money? And I'll never forget the response. It was that at a certain point, it's all about keeping track, keeping score against his competitors. So it's not about needing the money or using it for useful purposes. It's an ego trip to make sure that they have more than the guy, you know, at their social club or whatever, who they see as their competitor. And that just, you know, obviously that has no social value. And everybody knows that if you would take the money that is now stuck at the top of our wealth and income pyramids and put it into the pockets of people who really need it, it would give the economy a much bigger bang for the buck, because people at the low wage end of things have to spend nearly every dime that they make. They're spending it at the grocery store. They're spending it on their utilities. They're circulating it more in the economy instead of the wealthy who can just squirrel away so much of their wealth. And especially with all of the talk now about perhaps a coming recession, this is a really important piece for people to be repeating, that now more than ever, we need to make sure that we are lifting up people at the bottom of these income gaps.
And just to underscore how modest even Sanders's radical sounding tax plan, I mean, it sounds radical if you just read the highlights, but this is how modest it is. He says the tax plan would start with a 1% tax on net worth above $32 million for a married couple. That means that a married couple with $32.5 million would pay a wealth tax of just $5,000. Just $5,000 out of $32.5 million. That rate would then increase to 2% on net worth from 50 to 250 million, 3% if your net worth is 250 to 500 million, and so on. The maximum tax is only 8% on wealth over $10 billion. This is for married couples. So we're talking about a minuscule tax on an unimaginably large amounts of wealth. And of course, the American wealthy are fighting even that, right? I mean, I'm just picturing someone making $32.5 million saying, I need that extra $5,000.
Right. I know. And what this whole debate is doing is it's drawing attention to the fact that we are the richest country in the world, and we have plenty of resources in this country to be able to take care of our basic human needs and to transition to a green economy that can address the challenge of climate change. The problem is so much of our money is tied up in the pockets of these billionaires and other people at the top. I would also add a lot of it is going into the military. That's another place that needs to be shaken up as well. But we should absolutely reject the idea that we need to cut spending on programs and policies that ordinary families really rely on. We're going to be hearing a bunch more about that if these fears of recession coming, you know, keep keep happening. And it's really important that people push back and say that we need to do the opposite. We need to stimulate the economy by putting more into the pockets of the people at the bottom. And we need to break up the concentration of wealth and income at the top.
Sarah, give out a website where people can directly read the executive excess report.
Yeah, it's on the homepage of the Institute for Policy Studies, which is ips-dc.org. And if you want to keep up on this kind of inequality research on a regular basis, we also run the website inequality.org, and we have a free weekly newsletter that you can sign up for on the homepage of inequality.org.
So ips-dc.org and inequality.org. Sarah, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Sarah Anderson is director of the Global Economy Project and co-editor of inequality.org at the Institute for Policy Studies. She's also the lead author of the Executive Excess Report that was just released. We've been discussing that report and Bernie Sanders' tax plans. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupatsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.